human life. What is the real goal of human life? To majority of people, we always hear the comments that this person was a very good person. He led a very good life. He did not cheat. He did not tell lies. He worked hard, earned money, took care of his family. He also did a lot of social service. So, we call generally such a person what? A very good person. He led a good life. But we have to ask ourselves, is that the primary goal in life? Is there anything beyond that? Is it just enough to lead a good life, take care of your family, do social service, don't cheat, don't lie, and say that is a good life? Is there something beyond that? What is that?
Seva.
Seva is there. You are doing seva, you are taking care, you are doing social service. You take care of your family, you do seva, you go to temple, you pray, I don't cheat, I don't lie. But is that the ultimate goal of life?
Selfless.
You are doing seva also. You are also serving community. You give dana, you give charity, you go and do seva. So you take care of both your family and your society. But is that the goal of human life? So what is the goal of human life?
Moksha.
Moksha, exactly. So when we say we lead a good life, then if we look at the scriptures, they give us four goals, isn't it? What they call the purusharthas, which is dharma, kama, artha, moksha. So when we say we lead a good life, out of these four goals, which goal have you fulfilled? Have you fulfilled dharma?
Yes.
Yes, you have done that. You fulfilled dharma. You have done your duties to family, to society. You go to temple, you pray. So dharma, you have taken care. Kama, you have satisfied your desires also. Artha, you have some possessions, you have car, house, etc. But you have forgotten the most important goal in life for moksha. That's why out of the four purusharthas, moksha is called the param purusharta, the highest possible goal of human life. So, until one does not awaken to such a goal, that means we have not completed this human journey. And in order to attain moksha, there is only one sadhana, which is, what is the sadhana to attain moksha?
Jnana
Yoga. Ultimately, you have to come to Jnana Yoga. So, Jnana Yoga is the ultimate solution to attain moksha. So, that's why in the last few verses that we have been going through, Krishna has been glorifying Jnana Yoga. So much so that in verse 33, the last two lines, very powerful verse there, verse 33, last two lines, after Krishna explained about the various types of actions that we do, various types of karma, we do dhanam, we do prayers, we do fasting, etc. In this verse 33, he concluded and said, sarva karma akhilam jnane parisamapyate. Sarva karma means all actions, akhilam without exception, parisamapyate culminating jnanam. The whole purpose of doing all the seva, duties, dhanam, prayers, etc. must bring you to the doorstep of knowledge. Otherwise, the whole process of doing karma has been wasted. So now that he has glorified jnanam as the ultimate goal in human life, right? That sadhana that will help us to attain moksha. So now obviously, you know, like when you see a television advertisement that glorifies a product, tells you this product is good, it's nice, it's, you know, everything about good things about the product, what is the next thing you want to know? What's the next thing you want to know? How much it costs? And then, huh? Where can I get it? How do I attain it? So now that Krishna has built up the whole interest in jnanam, so in the next verse 34, he has to tell you how you will get this, or how you should get this jnanam. And this is a very popular verse, verse 34 in the Bhagavad Gita, because it explains about the guru and the student, the qualities of the guru and the qualities of the student. And one very important point that is explained in this verse is that in order to attain jnanam, we must have the help of the scriptures. We cannot attain jnanam by ourselves. We need the help of the scriptures and we need the help of a guru. These two things are emphasized in verse 34. You need the scriptures and you need the guru. Why? Jnana yoga is not like other sadhanas. For example, if you want to practice japa, you don't need a guru. You can sit down and do japa on your own. If you want to go on pilgrimage, you don't need a guru also. You can go on your own also. But for jnana yoga, you have to have the guidance of the scriptures and you must have the guidance of the guru. Why? Because with our limited understanding, sometimes if we try to interpret the scriptures, we either get confused or either we give up in frustration. We cannot understand what the scriptures are saying, or even worse, we misinterpret the words of the scriptures and take a totally wrong view of the scriptures. So there are also many examples which are given in our scriptures that many great people have attained this knowledge without a guru, isn't it? We have come across Ramakrishna Paramahansa, and even Adi Shankaracharya, although he had a guru, but he had the knowledge already. So when we look at these people, we must understand that this is only an exception. It is not a general rule. We cannot follow the example and say, Ramakrishna didn't have a guru, I don't need a guru, I can attain moksha myself. Because we are all not like Ramakrishna. So exception means what? What is, when you say exception means what? It is only an exception, it is not the rule. Right? Exception can never become the rule. Okay. So now, let us look at the guru now. Even when we talk about the guru, there are generally four types of guru in this world. So we should know what are the types of gurus here also. The first guru, which is in abundance, you're going to find in Kali Yuga, which is already mentioned in our scriptures, that in abundance this type of gurus will be available, is called the false gurus. A lot of them come. They come to for one purpose only. That is to fatten their bank accounts, right? So they are only interested in how to use religion, spirituality to enrich themselves, right? And they even sell you mantras for money, right? So we call them what? Merchants of mantra. They are merchants of mantra. They are selling you mantras for money. And they take money, they take gifts from disciples and for their personal needs, but they do not help the disciple to uplift themselves. And Saint Tulsidas, Tulsidas the one who, you all know, right, Tulsidas the one who wrote the Hanuman Chalisa. Saint Tulsidas said, a guru who accepts money from a disciple and does not remove his or her ignorance goes to hell. That guru will suffer. So sometimes we don't have to worry. It is the guru who takes money under false pretenses and does not help you to uplift yourself, that guru himself will suffer. So one type of guru is a false guru. Second type of guru is a guru who just imparts knowledge. He gives you knowledge about the scriptures, about God. That is the second level of guru. The third level of guru is what we are, which is being mentioned in this verse 34. This guru which is being mentioned in verse 34 is the third type of guru who is a self-realized guru. What is the difference? He helps devotees maintain a state of God consciousness all the time due to his own divine powers. So this guru already has certain divine powers. He is able to guide and help the devotees to maintain a level of God consciousness. That is the third type of guru, which is mentioned in verse number 34. And therefore, who is the fourth guru, fourth type of guru? Devotion. Who is the fourth type of guru? God himself. Vishnu Mande Jagat Guru. He is the guru of all gurus. So the fourth guru, the highest guru, which Arjuna was very fortunate to have, is God himself there. Now, in the Upanishads, it is given that a true guru must have two qualities. One quality is called Shrotasya. Shrotasya means that guru must have gone through teachings, he must have learnt his knowledge at the feet of another guru. So one who has acquired knowledge by going through the traditional way of learning knowledge. And this knowledge is not only just knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, but a guru must have thorough knowledge. That means he must know the Vedas, the four Vedas in and out. He must know the Upanishads in and out, the Brahma Sutras, the Bhagavad Gita, Ramayana, Mahabharata. So one who knows that has a thorough knowledge of all the major scriptures available in Hinduism. So such a guru who has gone through the traditional learning and has a thorough knowledge is called a Shrotasya. And what is the second quality which is given in Upanishads is called Brahmanishtha. Brahmanishtha means he is a God realized soul. So these two qualities, Shrotasya and Brahmanishtha, here Krishna also mentions the same two qualities, only he gives different terminology. And what is the terminology that Krishna uses here? Look at verse 34, the last line. One quality is called Jnaninas. Jnaninas means those who are endowed with the knowledge of the scriptures. They are Jnanis. They are called Jnanis because they are men of wisdom who have attained all the knowledge of the scriptures by learning at the feet of a guru. And Tattva Darshina means they are the God-realized enlightened souls. Right? So now the question is, sometimes we ask, how do we know who is the true guru? If we look at these two qualities, they are well versed in the scriptures. Our knowledge is so limited. How are we going to test them for their knowledge? There's no way we can test them for their knowledge. At the same time, we are not God-realized souls. How are we going to recognize another God-realized soul? So sometimes we don't have to worry, as it is said, we don't have to go and search for the guru. When your mind is ready, when your mind is purified, when you are thirsting for that knowledge, the right situation will be created for you and you will get the guru. And if you come across a wrong guru, then what can we say?
Better luck
next time. Sometimes it is our own karma to fall under the influence of a wrong guru who misguides you and takes your money and does not impart any knowledge to you. So we don't have to worry about searching the guru. What we have to worry is we put in the effort, the right conducive environment will be created and a guru will come into your life.
And a lot of people we meet in life as well, you know, talk, we go for, and all those gurus as well, do we have to have the one realize? I mean, a lot of people I find who have gurus who live somewhere and go for talks all over and they have minimum contact with them.
Right.
Maybe they meet them twice a year.
Right.
Or whatever. And then, how does that guru who is not within your life, how is he able to keep you maintained in that state of God consciousness? I don't get this at all.
So, it is not easy also, because you are talking of guru who stays somewhere far away, mm-hmm. and maybe twice a year he comes or you go to see him in his ashram. So what do? In order to fill that gap, that's why we should not be close-minded in the initial stage. When we have not yet attained that knowledge yet, we should be open-minded. We should respect. You can have your guru, you follow his path, but respect all the gurus. So as other gurus also are available, go and listen. After all, they are all telling you the same thing, right? you choose one guru that you maybe accept as your guru, but you respect all the other gurus, take the knowledge that they give you, absorb the knowledge, so it keeps you, what you call, constantly interested in the knowledge, right? And that guru which you meet maybe twice a year, or maybe you are in contact with him through phone for some guidance and all that, that you accept as your main guru, okay? But today we are fortunate because we have many Swamijis coming here to give lectures, so attend, by all means attend. And then we have the internet, which you can hear so many other gurus also. Listen to the knowledge, accept it, but if you want, just have one guru as your main guru, right? But you need that constant contact with this knowledge. Otherwise, to meet a guru just twice a year is not going to help you at all, right? Okay, so what do these great ones do? What do these gurus who are jnaninas and who are tattva-darshina, who have got these two qualities? Look at the third line, verse 34. Upadekshanti te jnanam. Te meaning you, they will give you. Upadekshanti means they will impart knowledge to you. That is their duty, to impart knowledge to you. Now, you also have to understand, they are imparting knowledge to you. But question is, we always question, is this guru the right guru? What should we instead question? We are always questioning, is this the right guru? Is this the true guru? But what should we question?
Are we the right disciples?
Isn't it? We are always looking at a guru, but we are not looking at ourselves. Am I the right vessel to receive this knowledge? Because not everybody is ready to receive. You can find the best guru in the world, but it's not going to make any change, any difference in you. Because why? You are not ready, you are not receptive to this knowledge. Right? Sorry? So you are not ready, you are not receptive. So what qualification should you have? You should ask yourself. Don't ask what qualification the guru has. First ask, do I have the right qualifications to receive this knowledge? So what are the three qualifications that you should have? Also is mentioned in this verse. What are the three qualities of a student also? So what is the first quality is, do you have intense desire for this knowledge? The first thing is, do you really have a desire for this knowledge? And how will the guru know that you have desire for this knowledge? By asking questions. So, surrender is there, but the intense wanting of this knowledge, the indicative factor is by constantly asking questions. So if there is an intense desire to learn, you will be constantly looking for answers, searching for answers, wanting to ask questions. So the very first quality here given in the second line, verse 34, is pariprashna. Pariprashna means asking questions. Constantly asking questions. And important thing is, here we must understand, our religion does not forbid us to ask questions. Because who was Arjuna questioning here in the Bhagavad Gita? No other than Lord himself. So there is nothing wrong to ask questions. But how should you ask questions? With humility, not with arrogance. So question by all means, but ask with humility. So, understand, I am ignorant, I need to ask questions to clear my ignorance. But, many people also go to a guru, they also surrender to the guru, but what are they interested in? What are they interested in? Most people, generally, majority of people go and search for guru for what? The problem solved, isn't it? Want my daughter to be married, want my business to be successful, guru bless me promotion, bless me to win lottery ticket. How many people actually go and surrender and say, I want knowledge? So that's why here Krishna says that you have to ask questions. If you are serious to look for a guru, the purpose is for you to ask questions to attain knowledge. The others are all secondary matters which will come and go. The ultimate is to seek a guru is when you have the thirst for knowledge. So therefore ask questions. And What is the other quality that you should have? The second quality is given in the first line of verse 34, paripatena. So, patena means to fall on the floor. Paripatena means to totally fall on the floor, which means like when we go to temple, how do we fall on the floor from head to toe, right? That is called paripatena, meaning totally fall on the floor. So, what does paripatena here means? Total surrender. Total surrender. Right? So, when we say surrender means that humility you should have. Right? That humility you should have. And there are so many vices in us, isn't it? We have so many vices. Do you know what is the greatest vice in the world? There are so many vices. We tell lies, we cheat, we do certain other things. But what is the greatest vice in the world?
Pretending to be what you are.
Pretending to be what you are not, okay? Some ego.
Criticizing others.
Some. Well, what is the greatest vice in the world? Pride. What is the greatest vice?
Jealousy.
Jealousy. Some. Ego. What?
Arrogance.
Arrogance. The greatest vice in the world, a saint says, is when we consider all our vices as virtues. Isn't it? That is the greatest vice. When you have all the vices, at least you recognize your vices fair enough. I know these are the wrong qualities I have, I should improve. But the greatest vice is when the person is doing all this thing wrong and he says, so what? Everybody is doing it. This is nothing so great. Right? So when you don't even recognize your own vices, you consider your own vices as virtues, that is the greatest vice you can ever have. Because you will never ever change at all. So that's why humility is very important. We must recognize, I have these bad qualities in me. I want to change. These are not good qualities. I should get rid of them. That's called humility. Paripatena, totally surrender and seek help. Third quality given in the second line of verse 34, sevaya. Sevaya means service. Service to who? Service to the guru, service to society. You must not stop service. Because don't think that just because I'm on the path of knowledge, I'm above everybody else. So to keep you humble also, carry on that attitude of seva. Carry on with society, with the guru, with whoever needs your service, carry on. So this will keep you humble also. So these qualities if we have, then the right guru also will come and we have the perfect combination. We have the guru who is a jnanina, tattvadarshina. We as a disciple have these three qualities, pariprashna, thirst for knowledge, paripatena, total surrender, and sevaya, we have the attitude of service. When that combination is there, Krishna says, these gurus will upadekshanti de jnanam. They will impart the knowledge to you. And thus, what happens now? Okay, we know that if they impart the knowledge, the next question obviously will be, what happens after I attain this knowledge? So now in the next verse 35, Krishna will tell us what is the phalam or the fruit of this knowledge. What is the benefit of having this knowledge. So in this verse here 35, he talks about the very first benefit of this knowledge, which he calls here as moha. If you look at verse 35, the word moha is there. So here he says, yach jnatva. Jnatva means once you have attained this knowledge, once you have come to grasp this knowledge, na punar moham. You will never ever fall into this state of moha, which means delusion. And this biggest delusion causes all sorts of conflicts in our life. In fact, what was Arjuna's problem? His main problem on the battlefield was conflict arising out of what? Attachment. Due to his attachment, there was a conflict arising in him. because of this conflict, Arjuna was not able to decide, should I discharge my duties as a soldier on this battlefield, or what about my duties as to my guru, to my elders? Which one should I actually play the role on this battlefield? So there is a conflict now. Am I a soldier to play his duties, or at the same time I have my gurus, I have my elders, I should also respect them? So there was a conflict in Arjuna's life. And these conflicts also make us sometimes very uncertain how to face the future. Just like what Arjuna said, even if I do my duty as a soldier, I fight this battle and I gain victory, I get back my kingdom, I get back everything, all the comforts, what is the use? Because I will have the blood of my gurus and my beloved elders and my beloved relatives in my hand. So how can I even enjoy that? So Arjuna also had this conflict. Then the question you will ask Arjuna, then why didn't you stay in the forest? Why did you come to the battlefield? You came to battlefield, you had conflict, why not you stayed in the forest?
He still had a conflict.
In the forest also he still had a conflict, isn't it? Because he wanted to come and get back his kingdom. He wanted to avenge all the atrocities that the Kauravas had done. So neither is he happy in the forest, neither is he happy on the battlefield. So now, every day can become a conflict if we don't know how to master the main delusion that here Krishna is talking about. What is the main delusion that we all face? This moha. What is this main delusion in life that we all face? Why is there attachment?
Permanent. They think we are permanent.
We think we are permanent. Why do we face the biggest delusion we have is because we accept that we are this temporary body-mind complex. Whereas, what are the scriptures telling us? The scriptures are saying, Tat Tvam Asi, Tat, that you are. You are not this, but you are that. Time and time again, continuously, the scriptures are repeating to us. So, they are not saying that you should not have things in your life. The problem is not by having desires is the problem, or you have possessions. That is not the problem. What is our main problem? Having possessions, relatives, relationships, friends, that is not a problem. What is the biggest problem?
Greed,
attachment. So all these problems are what? How to live in harmony with what we have. Not problem with what we have. Our problem is how to live in harmony with what we have. That's why the scriptures tell you, you can have kama, you can have artha, you can have desires, you can have artha, possession, but you must learn how to live in harmony with everything. When you are able to live in harmony, then only you can grow spiritually. Right? But here, the scriptures teach us how to live in harmony, but most of the time when you ask people to come to this spiritual knowledge, they say they have no time. They are busy chasing more and more what? Kama, more and more artha. Now, just look at the logic of it. You already have a problem with envy, greed, desire, jealousy, then what do? You go and chase more karma, you go and chase more artha, what is going to happen to your envy, desire, jealousy, greed? It is just going to go on and on and on. So the problem is not by going and getting more and more is going to resolve your problem. The problem is learning how to get a balance of material growth and spiritual growth. Spiritual growth will teach you how to live in the material world in harmony. So what we are missing actually is the spiritual growth here. So now here, also Krishna will later tell Arjuna in chapter 6, Tasmat Yogi Bhava Arjuna. Therefore, Arjuna, before you start on the spiritual path, be a yogi. What is a yogi? A yogi is one who leads a disciplined life. That means my intake of food, my sleeping time, my recreation time, time I give for my prayers, everything is well disciplined. How are we going to start on the spiritual path if we don't have the first discipline of our lives also? So you have to invest time. So that's why at the end of chapter 18, when Krishna has given all the knowledge to Arjuna, if you look at chapter 18 verse 72. Chapter 18 verse 72. Almost, he has finished giving all the knowledge to Arjuna. He says, I've got nothing else to tell you now. But one important question he wants to ask Arjuna. So, what is the question he asks in verse 72? Has your delusion, moha, the same word is there, moha, if you see in the third line, verse 72. Has your moha, delusion, born out of what? Ignorance. That moha is caused by our ignorance, ignorance of who we are in reality. Because of their ignorance, we are in this delusion. That's only one question that Krishna wants to ask. Has your delusion born out of ignorance, has it been removed? So how can ignorance be removed? What is the remedy to remove ignorance? Knowledge. Knowledge is the only remedy. Once that ignorance is removed, once we understand our reality, our real nature, there is no more delusion. And Arjuna answers in the next verse, Nashto moha. My moha is completely destroyed. And what he says, I shall do as per your instructions. So the main important thing of this knowledge is to destroy moha, this delusion. That is the main purpose, and that is the main question that Krishna asks of Arjuna. So, in fact, a very nice example of this delusion that we live in, that we are this body, because we are attached to this body, we are attached to our possessions, attached to our relatives. But a very nice example was given by a Swamiji recently. He said, when we are young, we go to kindergarten. When we go to kindergarten, the teacher will take out all kinds of toys for us to play, right? Toys, coloring books, etc., etc. And for 3-4 hours, the child is happy playing with the toys, playing with the coloring books. When the bell rings, time to go back, what happens to all the toys and the coloring books? We have to return everything back. We don't hold on to them. When the time comes, we return. When we have them, we enjoy them. Similarly, in life also we come, Krishna also gives us all these materials. House, car, family, etc. What is the purpose of all this? Use them for what purpose? To grow spiritually. We have to understand that these are all temporary things given to us from birth to death. When death comes, what do? With our possessions, family, etc.? Give it back to us. They don't belong to us. We use them, they are with us, but they don't belong to us. And including what? Including not only the possessions, but including this body also has been temporarily given to us. We must recognize how to use this body to grow spiritually. That is the purpose of human life. So here Krishna says, Yach Nyatva, by knowing this, Na Punar Eva Moham. Your moha, your delusion will never ever return. You will never again get deluded in life. And that is the first benefit, that this knowledge will destroy your state of delusion. What is the second advantage of this knowledge is given in the last line, Drakshasya Atmana Athomai. Draksha means to see, you will see. But here we are not talking about physical seeing. What we are talking about is the inner vision, a higher vision. Awakening, this knowledge will awaken you. What will it awaken you to? You will see the same world. The world will not change. This knowledge does not change the world. This knowledge changes you. That's why the saying is there, we don't see things as they are. We see things as we are. Isn't it? We don't see things as they are. We see things as we are. So if we correct our inner vision, the world doesn't change, but we look at the world in a different light. And knowledge can change our inner vision. So what does he say? You will see the same world, Bhutani. Bhutani here means all the creation. Ase sena, without any exception, Atmani, in you. You will see the whole creation in you. So here you will see the whole creation in you doesn't mean you see the creation in your body. What does it mean?
When Krishna says to Arjuna, you will see the whole creation in you. What does he mean? What does he mean? If you have understood what is your real nature, so what is your real nature? If you have attained that knowledge and understood your real nature, which is what? Atman. When you say, I see the whole world in me, meaning what? I see the same Atman in me also. That Atman which is in me is also in all the creation. So you are not looking at the world and dealing with it in terms of different body, shape, size, color, religion, etc. But you can only see the divinity in everyone as you see the divinity in yourself. So knowledge clears away that delusion that you see everything as equal to you. Once you see everything equal to you, where is there any feeling of jealousy, envy, pride? All that disappears also. We only have this because we see that person different as us. Once we only recognize that same unity, then all these negative qualities will go away. So Krishna says, you will see that single Atman, the singularity in everything, in yourself. And then Krishna says, you will see the whole creation also in me also. So simple to understand this is that, first we realize that the waves and the ocean are different. We see the wave has a different shape and form. The ocean has a different shape and form. Then what is the second understanding we have? A higher understanding. What is wave? Wave is nothing but water. What is ocean? Ocean is nothing but water. In reality, both wave and ocean are but one. Right? Same. But because wave has a different shape and form, we call it wave. Similarly, why we call different human beings, we are only looking at a different shape, form, size, colors. And thus we segregate everybody accordingly. But once you attain this higher knowledge, this consciousness, you see only one singular Atman. So that is the what we call the benefit of this knowledge. Now, in the next verse, verse 36, Krishna gives another benefit of this knowledge. So two benefits were given in verse 35, that is moha nashanam, this delusion will be destroyed. Second is what is in the scriptures is called jivatma paramatma aikyam. The individual jiva and paramatma aikyam means a merger of the jiva and atma. You see everything in one unity, oneness of jiva and atman. Now comes the third and the very important benefit here, which is what? He says, papa nashanam, all your papa will be destroyed with this knowledge. So this is something we have to understand. When he says, all your papa will be destroyed. And here he is saying, api chet asi papebhya sarvebhya papa kritama. Papa kritama means, even if you are the greatest sinner, even if you are the most greatest sinner, supposing all the sins which are mentioned in the scriptures, you have diligently worked hard to break all the rules in the book. Supposing he is putting that person as the most greatest sinner, such a person has broken every rule in the book. Even then Krishna says, and thank God we have not reached that stage, right? That we have broken so many rules, certain sins we have committed, but here Krishna is saying that whatever sins, the greatest sinner also can be saved by this knowledge, right? And you know what is the most ironic thing? We all want to go to heaven, isn't it? Don't all of us want to go to heaven? Some people are not sure. All of us want to go to heaven. But what type of actions do we do? Take us away and away and away further from heaven. And all of us want to avoid hell. But what type of actions we do? They take us faster and faster to hell, isn't it? So here Krishna is saying, all the papams that you have, and what does he compare the papams with? He compares all the papams with Vrijinam. Vrijinam means ocean. Now why is he comparing all our papams with ocean? What is the significance between our papam and ocean? You read that right. He says he is comparing all the papam with ocean. So why is he, does he compare papam with ocean? What is the relevance? What is the significance?
It's
large
as the ocean.
Huh? Sorry?
It's large as the ocean.
That means he is saying, imagine how many lifetimes you've gone through, how many papams you've collected, it is almost like the ocean. Because so many lives you've gone through, hundreds and hundreds of lives, how many papams we've committed now? Now we have such a huge bank of papams with us now. Right? So, now, in the scriptures also is mentioned that you can do certain, what they call prayaschit karmas. Prayaschit means repentance. Okay, you can do this kind of karmas which is given in our scriptures to sort of cancel or to lessen the burden of the past papams, right? But imagine if you have an ocean of sins there, how much of prayaschit karma must you do? As it is, to do puja on a daily basis is like a major effort, right? So can you imagine if you sit down every day and do so much of prayaschit karma just to wipe out the ocean of papams, and while you are wiping out that, don't you think you are creating your papam also? So where are you going to end up cancelling? What?
Carry forward.
Are you an accountant? Brought forward, carried forward, that's what accountants do. So it's true, we carry forward. That's why he's calling it ocean. He's saying your papam is like an ocean. And how do you cross the ocean? You need a boat, right, to cross the ocean. So what kind of boat do you need to cross the papam here? He uses the word in the third line, jnana plavene. Plavene is a boat. Jnana means you need the boat of knowledge to cross this ocean. The boat of knowledge will help you to cross this ocean. You know that's a very famous what we sing, the Linga Ashtakam we sing. Right? There's one line there. What do we sing there? Sanchita Papam Vinashaka Lingam. Sanchita Papam. You know what is Sanchita Papam, right? What is Sanchita Papam? What is our Sanchit? We say Sanchita Papam Vinashaka Lingam. Huh? Wipe out my Sanchita Papam. What is Sanchita Papam? The total, the accumulator, the total warehouse of all our papams. We are asking God to wipe out these papams. How will He wipe out? Why will He wipe out these papams? Why would He wipe out these papams? We are saying Sanchita Papam Vinashaka Lingam. Why? Why would He wipe out your papams? Why would you want to wipe out your papams? Yeah, but why particularly you? Why wipe out your papams? For what? There are so many people, everybody keeps singing Sanchita Papam Vinashaka Lingam, everybody will get moksha. So why are you qualified for God to wipe out your Sanchita Papam?
To go back where you come from.
No, but why particularly you? Why particularly you? So, until you have attained Jivan Mukta, that means you yourself have come to that realization of your reality, then you become a Jivan Mukta, then three types of papams are wiped out. That's why he is saying all the papams can be wiped out. Number one papam is what we call agami karma, agami papam. Once you become a realized soul, that means henceforth you don't create any more new papam in your life. So there is no more agami papam. That is wiped out. Number two, what about prarabdha karma? That karma which you are born with. There's papam there, there's punyam also there. What happens to that? You have to work it out. But when you become a jnani, when you have this knowledge of your reality, that prarabdha karma does not affect you anymore. So there is no more effect of that karma. You face all the external situations but internally they have no more effect on you. So prarabdha karma has no more effect on you. Agami karma has been wiped out, and because you have reached the state of jnani, sanchita karmas are burnt off by the grace of Lord. So effectively all the three karmas no more affect you at all. Right? So, why?
Singing the song doesn't help.
Singing the song doesn't help, but it should remind you that sanchita papa, only God will burn off the sanchita papa if you yourself become a realized jnani. That you don't create new fresh karmas, you are not affected by the karmas that you are going through, and sanchita papam is burnt by the very grace of Lord. So that's why he says papa nashanam. This knowledge will wipe out all the three types of papam also. And we must understand, not only papam will get wiped out, but also your punyam. Because even if you have punyam, what happens? You still have to come back. So this knowledge removes not only the papam, but when we say removes the punyam, means when you are doing all your actions, there's no more ego. Every good action you do also does not accumulate a new karma also. So both papam and punyam both get wiped out, and all the three types of karma, that is sanchita, prarabdha and agami, all three also are wiped out. So that is the biggest advantage of this knowledge. That only leads to ultimate moksha also. Okay, verse 37. Now in the last verse, Krishna compared knowledge with a raft, with a boat. He said knowledge is a raft and the ocean is your sins. This knowledge will help you to cruise safely and reach the other side, which is called moksha. But here he explains now, how does this knowledge help you? So here he compares now knowledge with fire, agni. So he says now, this knowledge is like a fire. And what are all your karmas? Karmas are all compared to the word here used in the verse 37, the first line, you see the word edhamsi. Edhamsi means fuel, all kinds of fuel. Means it can be wood, it can be ghee, it can be grains, anything that you put in the fire, that is called edhamsi, it is fuel. Now, whatever fuel you put in the fire, what is the end result? It becomes ashes. So here he says, whatever fuel you put in the fire becomes bhasmasat. Bhasmasat means ashes. It burns to ashes. Whatever you put in the ultimate end, you only see ashes. Now, what he's trying to tell you is, when this knowledge guides your actions, whatever type of actions you're doing, whether spiritual actions or worldly actions, every action when it is offered into this fire of knowledge gets burnt into ashes. Meaning there is no papam punyam. That's why this knowledge helps you to cross over all your sins and reach moksha. Because knowledge guides you, so when this knowledge guides you, all your actions do not accumulate any more papam, neither do they accumulate any punyam. And very important to know, what type of fire is this? What type of fire is this? He's talking about fire, but what type of fire? Samhita Agni. The word Samhita is there used in the first line. Samhita Agni means what? Blazing fire. Why does he use blazing fire? Why not just say fire?
Because the knowledge is so powerful.
Right. Exactly. So, when there is a very flickering fire, if you put a large piece of wood in it, what happens to the fire? So, what is he trying to tell you here? What is he trying to tell you now? He's using the word samido agnir, blazing fire, meaning what?
Nothing can shut the fire up.
Correct. So, what is the message here?
Knowledge is forever, like,
it doesn't
die. Knowledge
doesn't die.
This knowledge is powerful
and
permanent.
How can this knowledge become powerful?
If we practice.
What?
Collectible actions.
How does this knowledge become powerful?
Through practice.
where you study it on a daily basis. So he's telling you, don't just treat this knowledge as light. Don't think I have knowledge, I mean, all my sins are burnt away. He says it must be a blazing knowledge. It must be that strong knowledge in you that you are able to face every situation in life. You know how to face with this knowledge. So the knowledge, if it's weak, don't think it's going to help you with your tapas. Then you better go and sing that song. What is that? Sanchita Papa Vinashaka Lingam. Next life, come back and sing again. Sanchita Papa Vinashaka Lingam. That knowledge is saying must be a blazing knowledge in you. You must be dedicated, you must spend time. That this knowledge is in depth in you. That you are able to face situations in life. It must not just be a flickering knowledge. Then you are not able to face the situation in life also. So, Samido Agniya. That we must be able to apply this knowledge in our daily life also. So, he says here, Jnana Agni Sarva Karmani. Sarva Karmani means all your actions, you should have that sufficient knowledge so you are able to face different types of actions in life and burn everything. Both Punyam and Papam, everything must be burnt off also. Now, with this verse, with the previous verse now, verse 37, the benefit of this knowledge has been given to you. There are three benefits. There is Mohanashanam, there is seeing the oneness everywhere, and there is what we call Sarva Papa Nashanam. All your sins are also burnt away. Now, in verse number 38, here Krishna speaks about the glory of this jnana. And what is the glory? He says, Jnanena Sadrasam. Sadrasam means this knowledge is comparable or it is as equal to Pavitra. It is a purifier. This knowledge is compared to a purifier. Pavitra means that which purifies. And he is saying, Nahi Vidyate. There is nothing else beside knowledge that can purify you. There is nothing greater than knowledge. There is nothing that can purify you that is greater than knowledge. So knowledge is the most highest purifier. Now, let us look at his statement also. When he's saying knowledge is the highest purifier, we also know that there are many other things, sadhanas that we do that can purify us, isn't it? Like, example, what other sadhanas can purify us? Seva can purify us, japa can purify us, what else?
Going to
temples can purify us, some more?
Rituals,
prayers, and then everybody's favorite, the quickest way to purify?
Ganges,
go and dip in the Ganges, right? Take a bath in the Ganges, everything is clear, right? So, shortcut, right? Ganga Snanam, right? But here Krishna is saying what? There is no greater purifier than knowledge. So why is knowledge here considered the greatest purifier? That all other sadhanas cannot remove. That only knowledge can remove. That's why he's calling knowledge the greatest purifier. What is the difference with all the sadhanas that we do compared to knowledge?
Solution is what? Stay next to Ganga. Come in, same dive back into Ganga again.
So you're right. Knowledge is there, but there is a different reason why knowledge is the greatest purifier.
You won't get diversified.
Won't get diversified.
You won't stick to
without knowledge. Okay. Distracted, you mean? You won't be confused and all that. Yeah, exactly what you say. Because what is our greatest problem is what? Ignorance. Ajnanam is our greatest problem. And no matter whatever sadhana that you do, whether you do japa, whether you go to Ganges, whether you go to temple, whether you do seva, one basic problem cannot be removed, which is ignorance. So that's why he says knowledge is the greatest purifier. You can remove all other impurities with all your sadhana, but the biggest problem that you have, ignorance, cannot be removed. The only sadhana that can remove your ignorance is knowledge. And if you think about it, if other sadhanas could have helped Arjuna, why did Krishna waste 700 verses talking to him for so long, question answers and write Bhagavad Gita just to remove Arjuna's moha? He could have told Arjuna, don't waste time, the Ganges river is there, go and dive in the Ganges river, all your problems will be gone. In fact, I have also been wasting 4-5 years of my life teaching the Bhagavad Gita. I should organize tours, go to Ganges and tell you all, go and dive in the Ganges and all the knowledge. But can you gain knowledge through actions?
No.
You cannot remove your ignorance through actions. That's the main important point here Krishna is saying. That your ajnanam, your ignorance cannot be removed. And therefore, knowledge is the greatest purifier compared to all other sadhana sources. So even in the Gita Dhyanam prayer, we have in the beginning of the book, there's a six, seven verses there. The Gita Dhyanam, you can look at that prayer, which is in the very front part of your book. You will find that here, before the chapter 1, there's this 6, 7 verses here. And in one of the verses here, verse number 3, very, very beautiful verse. Can you see that in the beginning part here? Gita Dhyana Kriya, right? So look at verse number 3. Especially the third end. Okay, look at the whole verse. Mal nirmochanam punsam jalasnanam dine dine sakrid gitam basi snanam sansara malanashanam. The sansara, meaning the world, the dirt, mala means the dirt of the world, meaning the impurities in our mind, greed, anger, jealousy, ego, etc., can only be washed by how? Deep, not in the Ganga, but deep in the knowledge of the Gita. So what he's saying here, take a dip in the knowledge of the Gita. Your greatest impurity called ignorance will be washed away. That's why it is said that immersing yourself in the Gita is like immersing in the Ganga. Right? But we have to understand, ignorance has got to be wiped away. And knowledge is the only ultimate means. So here Krishna says, therefore, there is no other purifier in this world like knowledge. And another important thing which he says in this verse is that if you look at third line, Tat Swayam Yoga Samsiddhaha. Yoga Samsiddhaha Swayam means by yourself, first you have to do what? Yoga. What is yoga here? Yoga samsiddhaha means to be established on the path of yoga. So how do you start on this path of knowledge? Because knowledge is the ultimate destination. So how do you start first? He says, first become a yoga samsiddhaha. Meaning establish in yoga. What do we mean by establish in yoga? Here Krishna is saying, start with karma yoga. First do selfless action. So not jump into knowledge straight away, but first do selfless action. And the purpose of doing selfless action is because to conquer all these negative impurities in our mind, like greed, anger, jealousy, ego, etc. First conquer and dilute all this through doing karma yoga. Selfless action, seva, dhanam, tapas, all kinds of sadhanas you can do. So what happens, once you do this, you make your mind purer. But again, ignorance is not removed. So start with yoga samsiddhaha, and then he says, what happened? Then he says, you will find this knowledge where? Atmani. You will find this knowledge within. Because this knowledge is not telling you something about the outside world. This knowledge is not telling you to go somewhere to find moksha or to go and find a god which is up in heaven. What is this knowledge directing you to? That consciousness which is within. And why we are not able to realize this consciousness? Why is it so difficult for us? That God is in us, we say, isn't it? God is in you. Now, why is it so difficult for us to realize this God? Why is it so difficult? Okay, that's one reason. What is the other reason? He's so close to us. We say God is in you. He's within you. So close, yet we cannot experience it. Okay, ignorance can be removed by knowledge, but what is the first basic problem? You see, for example, if there is a lake and the lake has got dirty water and the water is turbulent, are you able to see the bed of the river? So what you have to do first? You have to clean the river water and you have to ensure that the water is not turbulent. Once the water is clean and still, you are able to easily see the bottom of the river. Similarly, the river is compared to our mind. So there are two problems in our mind. One is called vikshepa. Vikshepa means our mind is constantly turbulent. And the other is what we call malam, which is dirt of the mind. Once this mind is full of dirt, once this mind is full of turbulence, how are we able to realize that consciousness within? So what does Karma Yoga do? Karma Yoga helps us to stabilize the mind. It helps us to remove the dirt from the mind. Once the mind is stable, once the mind is clear, all you have to do is then sit down in meditation. You will automatically experience this consciousness. This Sat-Chit Ananda, which is within you, this bliss consciousness is within you, we are unable to experience. Why? Because the mind is turbulent, because the mind is full of filth. So that's why he says, first start with Karma Yoga. Tat Swayam Yoga Sam Siddhaha. Eventually, you will find, you will discover that peace in between. And how long will it take? Because this is a question all Gita students ask. How long will I attain moksha? Need some guarantee letter. So how long will it take? There is no time frame. So what does Krishna say? In due course of time. Meaning what? I am not giving any guarantee. It all depends on your own effort. If somebody puts more effort, you reach moksha faster. If somebody takes moksha, I can wait till another birth, then you wait till another birth. So that's why he says in due course of time. He does not give any commitment. It depends on your own efforts also. Right? So here he says, Kalina Atmani Vindati. Kalina means due course of kala, due course of time, you will acquire this knowledge, and with this knowledge you will acquire, attain moksha. And now in verse number 39, okay, verse number 39 now, he gives us the quality what we need also to attain this knowledge. So one of the very most important qualities here, in verse 39 he talks about, now first of all he says, when you attain this knowledge, what do you attain? In verse number 39, if you look at the third line, Param Shanti. If you attain this knowledge, you will get extreme peace of mind. Param Shanti. Bliss, you will attain this blissful state once you attain this knowledge. But now, all the while we are unable to attain this knowledge because we keep on identifying ourselves with this body-mind complex. What is the problem with this body-mind complex? It is subject to arrival and departure. It is subject to change. So, as long as we depend on this body which is subject to limitations, what happens to our peace of mind? It is also subject to limitations also, right? Because there are constant changes in our life, we go through the constant changes, our peace of mind also keeps on changing also. So until we understand this highest knowledge, Aham Atma Asmi, I am that bliss consciousness, we are never going to attain that Param Shanti. Now, so what do we need first to attain this what we call knowledge? So the first most important thing that Krishna says is, in the first line of verse 39, Shraddhavam Labhate Jnanam. This is a very famous verse in the Gita, famous line. Shraddhavam Labhate Jnanam. Jnanam is knowledge. Labhate means attain. Who is the one who attains knowledge? Shraddhavam means the one who has Shraddha, who has faith. So first quality, in order to attain knowledge, you must have faith. But faith in what? What should you have faith in? Faith in what? Faith in God. Faith in these scriptures, that the scriptures are telling you the truth. I accept that the scriptures are telling me the truth. I have faith in the words of the scriptures. Then faith in, somebody said faith in yourself, very important. And faith in God, faith in the scriptures, faith in yourself, and faith in the Guru. So have faith at least that all the scriptures are telling you is the truth. It is the truth. Because sages of saints who have come before, they have realized this truth. And they are also going about explaining to us about this truth. So Shraddhavam Labhate Jnana. Only the one who is endowed with faith will attain Jnana. Now, very simple example if you take, supposing many, many years ago when there was no camera and there was no internet. Supposing I went to US and I saw this majestic Niagara Falls, right? Beautiful God-made Niagara Falls. And I come back to Malaysia and I tell you that it's this beauty of God there called the Niagara Falls. You must go and experience it. And you have no faith in me. You have no faith in my words. So, would you ever put any effort to go all the way to US? You won't, because you have no faith at all in my words. But supposing if you have faith in my words, then what you will do? You will take the necessary action to go all the way to US, travel to Niagara Falls and experience. So that experience can only come because of what? Because you have faith. So only if you have faith in the words of the scriptures, then only you can experience what the scriptures are telling you. Otherwise now you will only say these are only words. Is it true or not? You know, is it right or not? I do not know. This was said thousands of years ago. Is there any value? So first of all, have that faith in the scriptures. And then, faith is not enough. Is faith enough? What else do you need? You have to practice. So, first thing very important here, the second quality that Krishna gives in the second line is called Tatpara. Tatpara means be sincere and committed. Give your time and attention to this knowledge. Don't take it as a part-time hobby. Okay? So, the faith, although the faith is there, if you have no commitment, if you have no commitment to the knowledge, then also it's not going to help you. Merely saying, I have faith in God, I have faith in Guru, but you do not commit your time and effort to this knowledge, you will never ever succeed also in attaining this knowledge also. So commitment must be there. And the last, the third quality I will tell you is Samyatendriya. That means have some discipline in your life also. Because this undisciplined life is what takes away all our time. Why we don't have time for prayers, why we don't have time to go to temple, why we don't have time to read the scriptures, because we lead an indisciplined life. So Samyatendriya means one should have some discipline of the senses. Right? So we will come back next week and we will discuss this verse and finish up chapter 4. And if we are early, then we will start on chapter 5 also. Okay. End with a prayer.
Vasudevasutam devam kamsa chanura marjanam devaki paramanandam krishnam vande jagadguru.
Thank you. Hari Om. Thank you.
She's not been uploading. Yeah. Yeah, she's gone and...